四个外加行的实修引导二，慈城罗珠堪布讲授。更多课程请访问堪布官方网站www.慧灯之光.com。
红我今天有几个能想咱爸妈给咱的东坡了，杨村说过我只有你爸妈中的几次当口的观众漫步过了几次几次到处心机拉不及的就是从各种爸妈似的红我今天有几个能想咱爸妈给咱的东坡，杨村说过我只有你爸妈中的几次当口的观众漫步过了几次几次到处心机拉不及的就是从各种爸妈似的红我今天有几个能想咱爸妈给咱的东坡，杨村这个我祝你爸妈中的一次长口的观众漫步过了几集几次到这句神界了解这次个的爸妈舍得红欧马红把这个的爸妈舍得红欧马红把这个的爸妈舍得红欧马红把这个的爸妈舍得我妈红把这个的爸妈舍得红我妈红把这个的爸妈舍得红我妈红把这个的爸妈舍得红我妈红把这个的爸妈舍得红我妈红把这个的爸妈舍得红接纳大家做了大病的到时候刚的那边啥不就是那段我懂他不做喜欢就当开心别人咋的说了中等的广播讲不要老乡咋了刚哥露出这么你正着你的难打打死你心里懂个就像走向你记得个老王子刚到这边装了马的根本都没动过了几次这做跟老婆这个大姐一样了这个姐样的松这个姐中年母年龙里姐叫做中子强马这个门塞定个人年个今年中子拉着冬天大家杀进大松用的你做家这头个就找就当这你家这道路门塞江湖上有烂的都马拉巴扎那的马拉巴扎那的马拉巴扎那的马拉巴扎那的马拉巴扎那的马拉巴扎那的马拉巴扎那的马拉巴扎那的马拉巴扎那的马拉巴扎那的马拉巴扎那的马拉巴扎那的马拉巴扎那的马拉巴扎那的马拉巴扎那的最多的基金接着我接着接到路的门把老师的挂档但就上路多白路住不必那我接的说了娘姐见不做的你没想说你没路见不我家的把客人当我站住什么东巴提及将来想在这路啊，各位法师，各位道友，大家晚上好。啊，首先请大家发菩提心。
Good evening to all teachers and Dharma friends tonight. Let's all begin this teaching by generating an aspiration of bodhicitta.
那么菩提心呢，什么叫做菩提心，我们昨天给大家已经介绍过了啊，简单的说用一句话来啊，这个表达菩提心的话，那么就是我们啊，为了啊利益天下所有的众生而啊成佛啊，为了成佛我今天啊要听这堂课啊，这样子叫做菩提心。
So as we talked about last night, briefly summing up bodhicitta, it is the determination and the aspiration to assist all living beings from suffering. And in order to reach this goal, the aspiration to achieve Buddhahood.
那么菩提心呢？我们昨天也提到过，这个无论是汉传佛教啊，还是藏传佛教啊，凡是大乘佛教都是一样的啊，非常非常的强调这个菩提心啊，像华严经啊等等，非常非常多的这个大乘佛教的这些佛经啊里面呢，也经常啊讲这个菩提心。
So regardless of whether it's the Tibetan tradition or the Chinese tradition, Mahayana Buddhist traditions equally emphasize the importance of bodhicitta. For example, bodhicitta is very much emphasized in the Flower Garland Sutra, for example.
这样子我们有了这个菩提心的时候呢，我们每一个人就是菩萨，每一个人都叫做菩萨。
Once we have cultivated bodhicitta, a person who has cultivated bodhicitta is referred to as a bodhisattva.
菩萨是什么？我们不要以为菩萨就是我们的大雄宝殿里面的高高在上不会说话、不会做事的这些拟塑的这些塑像。
We shouldn't understand bodhisattva to refer to a being who sits up in some high place, not speaking, and very remote from where we are.
这些塑像都是佛或者是菩萨的一种形象，就像我们一个人的一张照片一样这些不叫菩萨真正的菩萨就是有菩提心的人才叫做菩萨。
The various images that we are accustomed to imagining when we think of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas are precisely just that, they're representations. In fact, what a Bodhisattva truly means is a person who has generated bodhicitta.
我们拜佛的时候，拜菩萨的时候，这个拟塑的这个塑像，我们不是拜这个塑像，我们比如说像观世音菩萨的塑像观世音菩萨的塑像，我们把它当作能够说话、有慈悲心、能够度众生的真正的观世音来拜或者供。
So when we worship or make offerings to bodhisattvas, for example, Guanyin bodhisattva, for example, we are not making our offering to an image of Guanyin. We are doing so, imagining her as a fully animated bodhisattva who is able to speak, who is capable of engaging in actions that liberate other beings.
有了菩提心的时候菩提心真正的菩提心当我们的心里升起了这个真正的菩提心的瞬间瞬间我们就真实的进入了大乘佛教真实的进入了大乘佛教的这个修行的道路。
The moment from which we are able to generate bodhicitta in our minds is the moment from which we truly enter the path of the Mahayana tradition.
就像我们还没有皈依的时候呢，就是没有办法进入佛门一样就是还没有皈依的时候，我们不叫佛教徒。同样的，我们没有修菩提心的时候呢，我们就是不叫大乘佛教徒没有菩提心就没有办法进入大乘佛教的这个道所以呢我们一定要想一切办法修菩提心。
It's the same as when we have not yet taken refuge. We can't be considered to be genuine students of Buddhism. We can't be considered to have yet entered the gate of the Dharma.It's just like this with bodhicitta as well. Until we have cultivated it, we can't consider ourselves to have truly entered into the path of the greater vehicle. So for this reason, we really need to do our utmost to work on cultivating bodhicitta.
有了菩提心有了菩提心以后呢，我们然后就是接下来的事情都是很好办。比如说，我们有了菩提心以后呢，在这个菩提心的基础上我们也可以修这个净土宗念佛也可以修禅宗，也可以修密宗这些都没有问题的，这些修什么法都会成为大乘佛教，也就是说修什么法都能够，这个法能够让我们成佛。
Once we've properly cultivated bodhicitta, then any practice that we commit ourselves to after this will be capable of leading us to enlightenment, regardless of whether it's the Pure Land tradition or Chan practice or Vajrayana practice. Any of these practices engaged in on the foundation of bodhicitta are all equally effective.
那么如果我们没有菩提心啊，没有这个菩提心的基础，这样子的话，那么我们念佛啊也好啊，修禅啊，禅宗或者密宗啊，都不能啊成为大乘佛教。比如说净土宗啊，如果没有修菩提，没有发菩提心念佛啊，能不能往生西方极乐世界呢？可以往生西方极乐世界，但是呢，往生了以后呢，在西方极乐世界啊，就是没有发菩提心的人，就不是大乘佛教的菩萨，而是小乘佛教的阿罗汉，在极乐世界也是阿罗汉，只能是阿罗汉，还不是啊菩萨。所以呢，啊，像净土宗、净土法门这么非常简单的、非常有效的法门。也如果缺少了菩提心的话，那么往生可以往生，但是呢，啊，不能成为啊这个菩萨，更不能成为佛。所以啊，由此可见这个菩提心的重要性。
Without bodhicitta, then any dharmic practice we engage in will not fulfill the requirements of the greater vehicle. So it's very important that we cultivate bodhicitta. We can see this in terms of Pure Land practice, reciting the Buddha's name. Is it possible for us without the motivation of bodhicitta to pass into Amitabha's Pure Land? Well, yes, it is. However, without bodhicitta, then our arrival in Amitabha's Pure Land will be as an arhat rather than as a bodhisattva. So for this reason, we won't be able to become bodhisattvas and we won't be able to attain Buddhahood either. So we can see from this the importance of cultivating bodhicitta.
那么菩提心啊，菩提心的基础，这个我们昨天讲过，菩提心的基础就是啊慈悲心啊。也就是说菩提心啊来自于啊慈悲心，没有慈悲心就不会有啊不会有菩提心。
As we talked about yesterday, the foundation of bodhicitta is compassion. Without compassion, we can't grow into bodhicitta.
啊那么慈悲心啊它来自于什么呢？慈悲心就是来自于我们了解这个轮回的痛苦啊，了解六道轮回的痛苦啊，我们知道这个轮回当中的所有的众生啊都有痛苦啊，这样子的时候呢，我们才能够对这些众生啊发起慈悲心。
And compassion itself comes from a proper understanding of the suffering of samsaric existence. It's only after we have a proper understanding and appreciation for the nature of this suffering that we can generate compassion towards all the beings who inhabit its six realms.
那么这个了解啊六道轮回的痛苦啊，这个就是我们昨天讲的这个出离心的啊一部分。所以呢，出离心就是菩提心的基础啊。如果没有出离心的话，那根本就不会有啊，根本就不可能有这个菩提心。所以先是出离心，那然后就是菩提心。有了这两个基础以后呢，才能够啊证悟空性，就像禅宗讲的明心见性啊，明心见性。就是这个有了出离心和菩提心的基础，才能够啊明心见性。所以这三个啊，出离心、菩提心啊，还有就是这个证悟空性的见解，这三个都是啊相互有很大的关系啊，就是相互有依赖啊。所以呢，我们第一个
还是要从这个出离心开始。
As we talked about last night, having a proper understanding of the suffering of samsara is part of cultivating renunciation. So we can see from this that cultivating renunciation then is the foundation for bodhicitta as well. First we work on cultivating renunciation, then we move on to cultivating bodhicitta, and then we aim to arrive at a realization of the nature of emptiness. All of these three are necessary, and they are mutually connected. They have a great connection between each other.
我们现在很多人啊，昨天我们也提到过，很多人对佛教啊非常的感兴趣啊，对佛教感兴趣的人越来越多，但是呢，就是很多人就不知道啊，怎么样修，从哪里开始修。
As I mentioned last night, the number of people who are becoming interested in Buddhism is growing all the time. However, only a very few people, not very many people, know how to go about studying Buddhism and from where they should start.
真常的这个学佛的这个次第啊，首先皈依啊，然后守戒，守居士无戒啊。如果能够守无条戒，就守五条戒，如果只能守两三条戒的话，那就守两三条戒都没问题的，根据自己的实际情况啊，守这个居士戒。
The standard path or the standard stages that we usually talk about are first taking refuge and then taking the five lay precept vows. Of course, if it's not possible to take all five, taking two or three would also be good. This is something that everyone has to do in accordance with their own circumstances.
藏传佛教、汉传佛教啊，所有的佛教啊，都在强调三个字啊，这个三个字就是戒定慧啊，戒定慧。佛陀的八万四千个法门的啊，这些修心的这些部分啊，修心的部分全部可以归纳为就这三个字啊，戒定慧啊。八万四千个法门当中，关于修心、关于修心的这一块的啊，不管是密宗或者显宗的所有的经典的内容啊，都离不开啊这个戒定慧。所以我们首先啊皈依，然后受居士戒啊，这个就是我们戒定慧当中的戒。
Whether it's the Chinese tradition or the Tibetan tradition, all of the Mahayana Buddhist scriptures revolve around, or the Buddhist practice revolves around, the three key points of vows or discipline, meditation, and wisdom. In terms of these three key points, taking the five lay precept vows is belongs to the first of them, vows or discipline.
然后受了戒以后呢，我们开始啊禅定和这个正悟啊，这两个就是为了这两个啊。那么禅定啊和这个正悟啊，这个呢，我们之前还是要先去学一下怎么样去打坐，怎么样去修心啊，怎么样去修禅啊。所以呢，在这个皈依和这个受戒完了以后呢，还要关注。还要重视啊三个字，这个三个字呢，就是我们的学佛的方法，所有的学佛的方法就离不开这三个字，这三个字就是闻思修。
And after we've taken the lay precept vows, then we move on to the stage of meditation practice and the cultivation of realization. This, however, entails us learning about how to meditate and how we should go about doing this. So in terms of the process of learning about meditation practice, there are three key words that we need to bear in mind, and they are listening, reflecting, and meditation.
比如说我们修出离心啊，或者是修菩提心，那么首先啊，第一个要做的是什么呢？我们就是要去听啊，先去听这什么叫做菩提心，什么叫做出离心啊，然后呢，我们要去听怎么样去修啊，什么叫做修菩提心，什么叫做修出离心啊，这个修心的方法啊，到底是什么样子啊，这个我们要去听啊，要去听，那么这个叫这个听就叫做闻啊，听经闻法啊，这是第一个。
So the first of these, listening, refers to listening to the Dharma teachings. This, particularly in respect of meditation, our Buddhist practice, whether it be the cultivation of bodhicitta or the cultivation of renunciation, we first need to learn what is meant by these terms. And not only what is meant by the terms, but how do we actually in practice go about cultivating them? So this is, this entails a process of listening to teachings on these topics.
那么这个闻啊，闻怎么样解决这个问题？比如说像我们今天这样子面对面的啊，讲经说法，大家来听啊，这个就是其中的一个方法，也是最好的方法。所以我们啊，就像这样子的道场啊，里面有法师啊讲课的时候呢，啊，大家都应该来听啊，大家去听啊，然后没有人讲的时候呢。我们可以通过网络啊，通过网络也可以解决这个问题啊。然后我们还有很多很多的光盘啊，大家听这个光盘啊，还有网上的这个音频、视频，还有这个光盘啊，通过这些学习啊，没有问题的。那还有很多，比如说像台湾啊，有好多这个佛教电视台啊等等啊。现在这个高科技发达了以后呢。啊，给我们在这个学习上面呢，就是提供了一个非常非常好的这个方便，那非常好的这个方法。所以我们把这些都利用起来啊，作为我们的这个修行的条件啊。所以这样子的话，我们第一个闻就可以这样子解决。
So in terms of listening to the Dharma teachings, the best way, or one way, and the best of them is like this evening to attend a Dharma teaching in person and to listen to a teaching that's being given. So whenever there are opportunities like this to hear a Buddhist teacher give Dharma teachings, everyone should certainly take advantage of it. When such opportunities are not available, however, there are other means at our disposal. For example, there are many teachings available online. There are many DVDs available. In Taiwan, for example, there are Buddhist TV stations. So we should certainly take advantage of the convenience that modern technology affords us in studying the Dharma.
那么在通过这些方法啊，可以解决我们第一个啊闻这个问题就比较容易解决。然后接下来第二个就是思啊，思就是去思考啊，反复的去思考，因为佛教里面讲的这些道理啊，或者是佛教的见解、佛教的修心的方法啊，都是很深奥的啊，都是很深奥的。所以呢，我们啊，仅仅是听一下就不一定能够理解啊。所以呢，反复的去思考。
The second stage of our learning practice.Involves reflecting or contemplating on the teachings that we have heard. The reason why this is necessary is that the content of Buddhist thought, Buddhist ideas, Buddhist views are in fact very profound, they're very deep, and they're not something that we'll necessarily understand simply by hearing. So for this reason, it's very important that we reflect deeply on what we've learned.
然后通过这两个啊，通过听啊，通过思考，就通过这两个啊，我们就确定了这个修心的方法啊，大家都明白了这个修心怎么样去修，这样子的时候呢，然后就开始投入啊这个修心当中啊，这个时候就可以修， 虽然这个三个字啊，文思修里面，我们最终需要的就是修啊，修才能够解决最终的问题。但是呢，没有文，没有思啊，就是没有办法修。就不知道怎么修，所以实际上这三个都是啊，都是分不开的啊。文思修这三个是不能脱节的啊。我们前面讲的解丁会啊，这三个字呢是藏传汉传大家都在用。文思修这个说法呢是藏传佛教的说法，但是内容啊。不管是藏传佛教汉传佛教都是这样子的啊，都是这样子。汉传佛教也要去听啊，也要去思考，然后也要去修啊。凡是佛法都是这样子，所以呢我们啊，想真正学佛的人啊，真正想学佛的人，我们就是要重视这三个字啊，两个三个字啊，第一个就是戒定慧，第二个就是文思修。
So after we have learned about the Dharma, we've reflected on it, then it's time for us to put it into practice through meditation. But whilst this is ultimately what we're aiming for, and it's this practice that is going to really resolve our problems, we really can't engage in it until we understand what we're meant to be doing. So that's why listening and reflecting are so important, and why the three, listening, reflecting, and meditating, are inextricably linked. It's not possible to separate them from one another. Even though both the Tibetan tradition and the Chan tradition talk about the necessity of discipline, meditation, and wisdom, the three terms, listening, reflecting, and practice or meditation, is distinct to the Tibetan tradition. Even though putting it in this way is distinct to the Tibetan tradition, the actual practice of studying, thinking about, and meditating on the Dharma is something that all students of the Mahayana tradition, or all Buddhist students, regardless of what their tradition is, must do. So this is very important.
那么这两个啊，两种啊，三个字当中的前面的啊，这个解定慧是从佛教的修行的内容啊，从内容方面呢，就是这三个啊，所有的内容就是解定慧。从佛教的内容的角度讲，就是啊，这个解定慧。从这个解定慧怎么样学习，怎么样修心啊？从这个方法的角度讲的话，那就是文思修啊，学习的方法、落实的方法、修心的方法啊，从这个角度讲，就是文思修。
There's another way that we can understand the relationship between the two sets of threefold terms. We can understand discipline, meditation, and wisdom as describing the content of the Dharma teachings, whereas the threefold terms, listening, reflecting, and meditation refer to the practice, how we should actually go about implementing, realizing the content of these teachings.
然后这个文思考和这个修心啊，我们可以比如说在自己家里一个人啊单独思考修心也是可以的啊。还有一个方法呢，比如说我们建立很多的这个佛教的小组，学习的小组啊，然后呢就是比如说一个小组七个八个人，就像这个像菩提学会这样子的小组啊，然后呢这个小组当中大家先听看视频或者是听音频，然后第二个大家讨论就是这师兄之间沟通分享这样子讨论，然后第三个呢讨论完了以后呢大家一起修心共修大家一起打坐修心每天这个不可能是每天，但是呢每个星期像星期六星期天这样子的时候呢大家聚在一起，然后就听完了以后讨论完了以后呢大家这个共修打坐这样子的话是一个非常好的方法。
So whilst in terms of listening or learning about the Dharma and reflecting on its contents is something that we can do by ourselves in our own individual capacity, another way we can approach this is doing it in small groups by forming small groups, for small Dharma study groups like the Puti Xiehui groups, for example. This entails maybe 8 or 10 people gathering together, first listening to a teaching on DVD and then discussing the contents of the teaching amongst each other. And then after that, engaging in some group practice, group meditation. So this is not something perhaps that can be done every day. That's not realistic, but it's something that could happen on weekends, on a Saturday or Sunday, for example.
这样子以后呢，我们这个有这样子的学习小组的话，然后在这个当中，我们可以自己不懂的可以跟师兄讨论然后呢自己的感受也可以跟这个师兄之间可以分享，然后呢就是在学佛的人师兄之间鼓励大家学佛，这样子以后呢，我们就是有了一个文思修心的风气这比这个自己一个人修的这个力量可能是力量或者是我们整个的这个学佛的人当中的这个影响不一样，有一定的影响。这样子呢，我们可以动员大家，凡是学佛的人都来学习，都来闻思，都来修心这样子以后呢，每一个人都能够走上正确的道路，每一个人都能够走上解脱的道路，这样子是非常非常好的方法。
The advantages of studying in a small group format is that doubts you may have, you can take to the group and resolve them in this way. It's possible to share your thoughts with fellow Dharma students, and it's also possible to mutually encourage each other. So in this way, by forming small Dharma groups, we really establish an excellent atmosphere for the listening, reflecting, and practicing of the Dharma. And this has great benefits. It provides a kind of energy to practice that is perhaps greater than when one tries to embark on things by themselves. It also creates a situation where everyone has an opportunity to learn about the proper path of Buddhist practice and has the opportunity to enter into the path of liberation.
就像我们现在用的这个道场这样子的话条件非常的好那么建一个这样子的道场非常非常不容易的，很多人就花了很多很多的心血这样子建起来了以后呢，就这个样子的道场里面呢应该有这个文思秀，所以呢我们学佛的人就是离得比较近的稍微比较近一点的人都应该定期的，比如说星期天星期六这样子的时候到道场来，大家一起学习然后大家一起打坐共修这样子的话我觉得是非常非常好的。
And some Dharma centers are really blessed with very excellent conditions, and these are facilities that have been built with the labors and sacrifices of many people. So places like this no doubt have their own programs for the study of Dharma, and those who live in close proximity to such centers should certainly take advantage of their facilities and visit such places on the weekend and attend classes.
还有很多藏传佛教的道场或者是汉传佛教的其他的道场那么这些道场里面呢也应该大家要这个忠实文思修信我们的核心佛教的核心不是烧香拜佛不是烧香拜佛，更不是我们在道场里面就举办很多很多商业化的这个活动更不是所以佛教的核心就是戒定慧哪里有戒定慧哪里就是有佛教然后方法就是文思修，所以呢我们不管是稍微大一点的道场或者是小的道场都要忠实戒定慧和这个 文思秀啊，以我们应该想办法给大家创造一个这样子的平台啊，给大家一个提供一个文思修心的条件啊，这样子的话那我们修寺庙建道场啊都非常有意思的。
There are also no doubt smaller Chinese Buddhist centers and other Chinese Buddhist centers around. It's important that these facilities and these centers as well emphasize the study, reflection and practice of the Buddha teachings. It's not appropriate that such Dharma centers be places simply for the burning of incense and making of offerings to the Buddha, or even more seriously as places for holding all kinds of commercial Dharma activities. It's important that the core activities of Dharma centers revolve around the three notions of discipline, meditation, and wisdom, and that in terms of practice, the core activities revolve around study, reflection, and meditation.
那么还有一个呢，如果我们的佛经啊没有道场、没有中心这样子的话，那也没有问题的。就是比如说七个八个啊佛教徒啊聚在一起，就我们七八个人当中啊。啊，谁的啊房子稍微宽一点啊，就在他们家里。如果家里人啊不觉得烦啊，这样子的话呢，不影响到他们的这个家庭的生活。这样子的话，在不影响的情况下，然后我们啊就聚在啊这自己的家里学也是可以的啊。有寺庙，有道场啊，当然到道场去学。但是这些都没有的情况下呢，啊，也是有办法的，就在自己的家里啊，五六个、七八个、十几个聚在一起，然后每个星期就聚在一起，每周一次啊，大家学习文思修，这一天当中也有文，也有思，也有修啊，这样子，这个都可以做得到的。所以大家要好好考虑一下，我们啊，就是要这方面要考虑一下，我们学佛的话也应该有一个这样子的文思修心的风气啊，有这样子以后呢，大家都比较有信心啊，比较有兴趣。
Of course, we're very fortunate if we have monasteries or Dharma centers, we can attend to study and practice Buddhism. But if we don't, then it's completely fine that we gather together as a group of 7 or 8 or 10 people and meet in the house of one of the group members. So this might be the house of someone who has a more commodious space and someone whose family members are not unduly impacted by the meeting in their house. So by meeting once a week on the weekend, on Saturday or Sunday, and practicing, studying, reflecting, practicing together, it's possible to really create an excellent atmosphere for the study and practice of Buddhism. And this really gives other people great inspiration in terms of their study of Buddhism.
然后通常啊，我们自己在自己的家里修行，比如说每天啊早上啊早起一个小时啊，一个小时左右的这个时间啊，一个小时或者两个小时，一个半小时都可以，在这样子的时间当中啊，我们做功课，做功课我们大部分的佛教徒都会做的啊，都会做功课，但是这个功课的内容上有各种各样的内容啊。那么我们的这个功课里面呢，必须要有文思修，尤其是必须要有修心打坐啊。如果没有打坐，没有学习啊，那我们光是念经啊，这个不够的。比如说像心经、像金刚经啊、地藏经，这些都是非常非常有加持的这个佛经，但是我们念了一辈子也没有搞明白这个到底这里面在讲什么呀。所以光是念经还不行的，所以我们的这个功课里面呢，必须要有学习啊，必须要有这个修心，实际的修心，这个特别重要。
So in addition to this, we need to allocate time every morning for our own practice, an hour or an hour and a half, that we set aside. Of course, everyone probably, engages in some kind of practice, but in terms of the content of the of practice, there's obviously a great variety. It's important that our practice incorporate at least some study and, very importantly, some meditation practice. Many people may read sutras and recite sutras, such as the Diamond Sutra, the Heart Sutra, for example. However, simply reciting the words is not sufficient.
那么我们目前的这个很多的学佛人的啊修行的方法学佛的方法就是不是很如法啊不是很如法啊啊就是因为我们就这个传统上啊都是大家都觉得烧香拜佛然后呢念经磕头啊大家都觉得这个就是学佛啊我们的这个每天的时间当中有一个这样子的功课就够了啊这个就叫做学佛很多人是这么认为但是这个是不对啊烧香拜佛念经磕头当然好啊当然是好我们应该去做佛教徒应该去做但是呢这个我们必须要知道这个不是核心的啊这个功课啊这个根本就不是最重要的最重要的啊就是啊这个文思修尤其是修心搭着才是最最最重要的所以我们啊整个这个佛教徒也许或者是说我们大部分的这个佛教徒的这个做功课或者是学佛的这个方法我觉得我们应该做一个调整。
The way that many people engage in Buddhist practice is unfortunately not sufficiently in accordance with the requirements of the Dharma. Many people feel that making offerings, reciting sutras, and doing prostrations amounts to proper practice. Mm-hmm. And while all these practices are good and well, they're things that we should do as Buddhists, they are not the essence of Buddhist practice. They're not the core of Buddhist practice. It's very important, for example, that we incorporate meditation into our Buddhist practice every day. And so I feel that in terms of the way the majority of students are going about practice is something that needs to have some adjustments made to it.
我们很多人会想啊，也我们啊这个工作压力、生活压力啊这么多的压力当中，我们每天都能够烧香拜佛、念经磕头，已经是很不错了啊。我想可能很多人这么认为，啊是很不错的啊。但是呢，我们对自己的这个要求。哦，就不要那么低，稍微再高一点。其实有这个条件啊，其实我们每一个人有这个条件，就是说我们的时间上啊，并不是说要用很长的时间，就是这个功课的质量啊，功课的质量我们应该要提高一些啊，功课的质量提高，这样子的话，那么最后我们能够修出真正的这个佛的智慧。所以功课的质量啊我们会虽然是花了一些时间但是呢这个里面就是没有闻没有思没有修只有烧香拜佛啊这样子的话虽然是很不错的但是呢啊应该再提高一下。
Many people might think that given the very hectic pace of our everyday lives, being able to set aside time to make offerings, recite the sutras and do prostrations is already not too bad. Well, this is certainly the case. It's certainly not bad at all. However, we really should set our sights somewhat higher than this and improve the quality, really focus on improving the quality of the practice that we're engaging in. So this is, even though this does require some investment of our time, it's really about changing our attitude to really what constitutes valuable Buddhist practice.
学佛的目的是就是这个我们两个有两个目的。第一个就是断除我们自己的烦恼贪嗔痴等等的这些烦恼然后第二个呢就是增长我们的出离心菩提心和证悟空心的智慧这两个就是我们学佛的目的。那么这两个跟这两个有直接关系的 不是烧香拜佛。啊，烧香拜佛啊，有功德啊，烧香拜佛可以，我们可以积累福报啊，有功德啊。从这个角度来讲，当然是很好的。但是呢，烧香拜佛，我们光是靠这个烧香拜佛，能不能减少我们的烦恼呢？啊，很难说。我们烧香拜佛做了一辈子啊，但是还是有烦恼啊，还是有这个贪嗔痴啊，还是不开心呢，还是很这个自私呀，啊，还是很贪呢，啊，这些都有，该有的都有，所以啊，这个不能解决问题。嗯，然后另外一个呢，要增长我们的这个慈悲心和智慧啊，光是念佛烧香拜佛能不能啊，这个增长我们的慈悲心也很难啊。这当然我们不能说完全没有关系啊，也应该是有关系的，但是这个关系啊，就是只有间接的关系，没有直接的关系啊。有直接关系的就是文思修，文思修的话直接可以把我们的烦恼取消，直接让我们的这个智慧和慈悲心增长啊。所以最重要的就是文思修。
As students of Buddhism, we have two goals. The first is the elimination of our suffering, and the second is the accumulation of wisdom in relation to the cultivation of renunciation, bodhicitta, and the realization of emptiness. Now, in relation to these two primary goals, engaging in practices like making offerings, incense offerings, and reciting the Buddha's name, etc. These actions do certainly carry their own merit. They are certainly virtuous actions, but they're not of direct relevance to assisting us in the two goals that we've just mentioned. In terms of increasing our wisdom of compassion, increasing our wisdom, to say that making offerings, etc., is of no relevance is perhaps going a bit too far. But really, the approach that is going to be of direct relevance in helping us with our genuine Buddhist practice is a practice that is founded on the study, reflection, and meditational practice of the Dharma.
好，这一上呢，我们就讲了这个文思修心，或者是学佛到底要学什么啊？这个学习的方法是什么啊？就是讲这些啊，给大家简单介绍。然后接下来我们就讲今天的这个课程的主体的内容，就是四加心啊里面的后面的两个。
So we've just talked a bit about the importance of studying, reflecting, and meditating in terms of our approach to the study of the Dharma. Now I'd like to move on to the main topic of tonight's teaching, which is the last two of the four thoughts that turn the mind.
那么四加心当中，我们昨天啊已经讲过了这个人生难得，然后呢死亡无常，这个简单的给大家介绍了，但是具体的一些修心的方法、思维的方法，这个我们昨天没有来得及讲啊。那么大家啊，可以去阅读啊，或者是大家去闻思啊，我们昨天讲的这些这个论啊，就像宗喀巴大师的三主要道啊、大圆满的前行等等啊，这样子。然后我们也可以听这个音频啊，网上有很多很多关于思加心方面的这个啊实修的这个视频和音频啊，希望大家去自己下载然后学习。
Last night we talked about the first of the two four thoughts, the preciousness of our human birth and impermanence and mortality. Whilst we talked a bit about the content of these two, we really didn't have time to go into concrete methods for meditating and practicing on these two. However, there is a wealth of material available that students can consult to educate themselves as to the concrete practice methods. For example, the Dzogchen preliminaries, the Tsongkhapa's graded path literature. There's a lot of information available online. So regardless of whichever route you take, everybody would be very well advised to learn about the concrete methods of practice in relation to the preliminaries.
那么四家心当中的我们今天要讲的是后面的两个，第一个就是轮回的通库我们首先要去了解一下这个轮回它的通库。那么我们通这个了解的方法是什么样子呢？我们不需要用一种很悲观的这个心态去故意把很多东西曲解，把幸福的说成是痛苦的这样子的话，那实际上是错的，没有什么意思的。我们去思考这个轮回的痛苦的时候呢，我们要正视轮回，并不是把轮回本来是幸福的去说成痛苦，就是一个悲观主义的心态当然不能这样子。
So the third of the four thoughts that we're going to talk about tonight is the suffering of samsara, or the shortcomings of samsara. Now, in terms of coming to a proper appreciation of the suffering of samsara, this does not entail us making a very, or very pessimistically interpreting or forcibly, kind of mechanistically reinterpreting happy events as miserable or suffering, kind of imposing this reading on our existences.
然后另外一个呢我们就很多人觉得我们的这个轮回当中就是会有一些幸福所以我们拼命的去寻找幸福然后呢我们经常也讲我们的未来是光明呢我们的未来是幸福呀等等用这样子的这个词汇来就是覆盖一些这个来这个遮盖一些这个轮回的真相也不能这样子我们要正视轮回我们去思考的时候呢就是一个非常客观的公正的心态去思考思维这轮回到底是幸福还是痛苦如果是痛苦那有什么样的痛苦就是要这样子去思考深入的去思考。
On the other hand, we don't want to take an approach that covers up the sufferings of samsara. We often refer to the future with words like it being full of brightness or full of hope or like a radiant tomorrow and things like this. We don't want to go to the other extreme and cover up the suffering of samsara. On the other hand, we don't want to make an overly pessimistic reading either. What we need to do is objectively face square on the reality of cyclic existence and assess in a very objective manner whether this cyclic existence is in fact characterized by suffering or whether it's characterized by happiness.
那么幸福幸福这两个字就是在我们的想象当中一直都有一个幸福或者是幸福的生活所以我们就是一直都认为我们只要我能够努力的话就会活得幸福可以过上幸福的生活这样子我们一直都拼命的奋斗一直都是这样子但是呢实际上这个幸福在哪里我们大家都是很模糊的
All of us in relation to the word happiness have an idea in our minds of what a happy existence would be and we generally think that if we're able to apply ourselves diligently to this ideal that we will be able to realize this happiness, realize this happy existence. But in actual fact, in relation to happiness and its realization, most of us are quite confused and aren't particularly clear.
然后我们啊，这个心佛它的本质上，我们很多我们说法也不一样，就是什么到底什么是心佛，我们也不太清楚了啊。就是有一本书啊，叫做《什么是心佛》啊，这么一本书啊。那么这本书不是一个人写的，有全世界的啊大师级别的啊这些啊学者啊，心理学家、社会学家啊、哲学家啊等等等等，很多很多的这个学者啊来讲啊这个心佛啊到底是什么啊，然后每一个人的说法都是不一样，没有一个共通的观点，最后就是大家都不知道到底是什么啊，什么是心佛啊，我们每个人认为是心佛的东西啊，那是没有一个共通点啊，每个人的观点都不一样，所以我们如果今天让我们回答到底什么是心佛，我想很多人的说法都是不一样的，很多人也没有想过这个事情，所以我们一直都以为有一个心佛的存在，但是呢我们深入的去思考的时候，这个心佛到底是什么啊，是很模糊的。
In fact, most people have a very blurry conception of what happiness is. The essence of happiness is not something that most people have a clear idea about. There's a book called What is Happiness? It's not written by one person. There were 12 or so contributing authors who were high-level scholars of different disciplines. There were philosophers and sociologists and other scholars who contributed. Not one single person was in agreement with each other as to what happiness is characterized by. Everybody's definitions of what happiness were very different. So this is in fact the case. One person's definition of happiness is very different from the other, from somebody else's. It's difficult for us to arrive at a unified notion of what happiness is.
我们大部分的人觉得有钱就是幸福有钱就是幸福。比如说我们很多人觉得有一天我想有多少钱就有多少钱，这样子的话我一定会很幸福啊，我没有理由不幸福，为什么不幸福呢？一定会很幸福的。但是这个就是我们还没有钱的时候就是有这样子的想法。为什么这个时候我们还不知道有钱的感觉是什么就是因为我们没有感受过这样子的这个感受没有拥有过这样子的感受，所以我们一直都认为这个有钱的感受感觉肯定是非常非常幸福的。但是真正有了钱的人他就不这么认为，他知道这个是什么感受所以我们大部分的人的这种想法都是因为我们跟金钱有一定的距离这个庞大的财富有一定的距离那么这个魅力不是金钱它本身的魅力，而是我们跟金钱有一定的距离，那么这个魅力就是来自于距离对对对。
Of course, the majority of people probably think that happiness is derived from having money. But this is a common notion when one doesn't have something. The reason that we think that money is so capable of bringing us happiness is because at this point we don't have it. For people who are in possession of considerable money, they know that it doesn't bring them happiness. So really, what really feeds our idea that money is capable of bringing us happiness is the distance that lies between us and money at this point in time. So it's not money itself really that produces this expectation of happiness, but rather the distance. So it's distance that produces the attraction of money and the desirability, the beauty that we ascribe to it.
然后不仅仅是金钱啊，我们还有很多，比如说我们觉得啊，有一天我出名了啊，那么有名声啊，我觉得就很幸福啊。如果有一天有这个权力啊，当了高官啊，这样子就觉得很多人觉得幸福等等啊，我们有很多很多这样子的欲望，这些都是我们就是刚才讲的，因为我们没有当过高官，所以认为啊当官啊觉得很幸福，因为我们没有拥有过名声啊，所以我们觉得有名声啊很幸福。其实这些都，如果有一天我们享有的都有了啊，那么我们立即对这些东西都不感兴趣了啊。所以人就是一个非常非常人的这种心态啊，我们的心理的这种变化是一个非常奇怪的变化，但是这个我们很多人都不怎么去关注我们的内心的变化，所以我们不太清楚啊。实际上它的这个变化是一个非常奇怪的变化，但是这个奇怪的东西呢，它不是没有规律啊，它为什么这么变，它也有一个自然的规律，就像我们大自然的规律一样，它也有一个规律，但是这个规律，这个自然的规律，自然的法则，我们没有掌握好，所以这个内心经常让我们痛苦，经常让我们非常的痛苦，就是因为我们不了解它的规律啊，所以我们啊要进一步的去首先了解，比如说他想有钱啊，他觉得我有多少多少钱我就满足了，那么他是不是真的满足呀？我们要去了解一下他会不会到时候有说需要更多的啊。那么这样子的话，我们的身体，我们的这个力量是有限的，我们没有办法满足它啊，所以我们不了解，因为我们不太关注这个内心的变化，所以这个上面呢，就是制造了太多太多的痛苦。
And it's not just in respect of money that we operate like this. It's the same as fame. It's the same in relation to status. All of these statuses or situations that we have not experienced before, we ascribe the potential of their ability to give us, to bring us happiness. But actually, if there were to be one point when we had all the money we wanted, we had all the fame and status we wanted, it wouldn't bring us happiness, and we would be very clear of this being the fact. In actual fact, the way that the mind works, the changes of the mind, the way it interacts with things that it acquires and the ways that it changes follow a kind of order. It almost has a natural order of its own. But it's these changes of the mind and the way that the mind behaves that we really don't pay much attention to. We don't usually pay much attention to how our mind is responding. And on account of this, we experience a lot of pain. We experience a lot of suffering precisely because we don't pay attention to the way our mind operates.
那么金钱啊，不能给我们带来真正的这个幸福，这个只有人类历史上啊，只有两个人或者三个人啊知道这个。
The fact that money is incapable of bringing us happiness is something that over the course of human history only two or three people have known.
啊，三个人当中，第一个就是释迦牟尼佛，他在2500多年前就已经讲得非常非常清楚了。但是呢，我们没有人相信他，我们大家都觉得不可能，这个根本就不可能。如果我有一天发财了，我怎么不可能幸福呢？我一定会幸福的。啊，佛，释迦牟尼佛，如果我们不尊重的人呢，就会说迷信啊，这就是宗教迷信。那、啊、稍微比较恭敬、有恭敬心的，稍微比较尊重的人呢，那就是说这个就是释迦牟尼佛啊，为了什么其他的目的啊而说的。实际上啊，不可能啊有钱就不幸福啊，不可能有名声不幸福啊，不可能有权力不幸福，所以我们没有人相信啊。但是释迦牟尼佛真正他不是通过理论，不是通过其他，他是自己的亲身感受啊，证悟了这一个啊，这一点就是其中一个啊，就是释迦牟尼佛。
So the first of these three persons was the Sakyamuni Buddha, himself. He realized this experientially, but nobody believed him. Some people dismissed him as simply pronouncing superstitious things. Other people perhaps weren't as ungenerous, but they really didn't believe that money, the acquisition of material things, was incapable of bringing happiness. This is something, however, this realization was not something that the Buddha arrived at through, through theoretical study or any other means. It was a realization, a truth that he personally awakened to. So he was the first of the three people who realized this.
然后第二个人呢, 就是东西方的这些非常非常有钱的这些资本家, 他们过去就是犯了我们大家一样的错误, 就觉得有钱就是幸福, 然后就拼命了很长时间, 通过各种各样的手段, 最后真的是, 就成为亿万富翁。 那么这个时候呢, 他就发现这个金钱是不能给他带来幸福, 这是他们, 第二。
The second category of persons who also realized the incapability of money to bring happiness very rich people, capitalists in both the East and West, who originally felt and believed that money was capable of bringing happiness and invested a lot of effort and employed various means to attaining wealth, but upon getting it, realized that it really wasn't capable of bringing happiness. So they are the second category of persons.
那么第三个人呢, 就是自从1960年 到2000年 这个四五十的这个 时间，十五十年当中，半个世纪当中，就是以各种各样的方式去这个研究人类的这个快乐的跟幸福感跟物质有多大的关系，就很多很多很多的科学家去观察了研究了半个世纪的这个结果呢。 我们的幸福就是跟这个金钱是没有关系，最多也就有，比如说我们的整个的幸福感当中的10%或者是15%左右才跟这个金钱有关系，其他的都跟金钱没有关系。然后第三个人呢，他们就是通过研究，通过数据，最后明白这个金钱确实是不能给 给人带来我们所想象的这样子的幸福。
And the third category of people who have discovered the incapability of money to bring happiness is scientists who over the past 40 or 50 years, for the period of about half a century, have committed themselves to researching the relationship between happiness and material objects. And the conclusions of their research have been that money, in fact, has only a very small bearing on our overall happiness, perhaps only 10 or 15%. So this is the third category of persons.
这样子以后呢，我们不知道幸福在哪里，但是痛苦在哪里，我们大家都非常的清楚了。我们每一个人都可以说一大堆一大堆的痛苦。
So while we might not be so sure what happiness is or where it comes from, everybody is very clear about suffering, what it is and where it comes from. Any person could name umpteen sources of suffering.
所以我们现在就是不清楚到底真正的幸福是什么。我刚才讲的这一本书里面有一个人就是说幸福是什么，幸福就是一杯水，其实 这个也不能否定的，有些时候一杯水也可以给我们带来幸福感。比如说在烈日高温之下，这个工地上做工的一个工人来说，就在这个树荫下歇下来喝一杯凉水 当然给他带来幸福感啊，所以这个也是不能排除的。那么幸福感有些时候呢，就一杯水啊，一杯水也可以给我们带来幸福感啊。有些时候呢，就是这些庞大的物质也不能给我们带来幸福感。所以我们的幸福怎么样能够找到这种幸福，到底在哪里啊？大家都很不清楚，大家都很模糊的。所以佛陀也就知道这个，所以佛就经常讲轮回就是心痛苦，他没有用幸福这两个字来形容啊我们的轮回，佛陀就用痛苦这两个字来描述我们的生活和我们的世界。
So the lack of clarity that most people have in relation to defining happiness, was apparent in this book. One scholar described happiness as a glass of water. Well, it's certainly true that in some contexts, the glass of water could mean happiness. For example, for a worker, someone working on a construction site at extremely hot temperatures, to sit in a shady spot and to have a glass of cold water would certainly mean happiness in that moment. It's not necessary that happiness is sourced only in the really great things that we often attribute it to. Nevertheless, this lack of clarity in relation to happiness led the Buddha to describe psychic existence not as happy, but as suffering.
金钱虽然不能给我们带来幸福，但是呢，没有金钱我们没有办法生存，这一点大家都很清楚的啊。所以我们把金钱身外的物质用来作为一个我们的生存的条件啊，这个他能够做得到啊，这个能做得到。但是我们如果把它用来当做一个给我带来一个幸福感的东西去赚钱，这样子的话，那一定会失望的。他做不到，这个不是他的范围，不是这个不是他的能力的范围。
Money may not be capable of bringing us happiness, and yet we need it to sustain our existences. This is something that there's no argument about. The problem comes, however, when we approach money as something that can bring us happiness. And if indeed we do approach money in this way and go about making money in order to get happiness, then we will surely be disappointed, because this is a result that is beyond the capacity of what money is able to bring us.
当然我们在这个现实生活当中短暂的幸福啊，或者是短暂的快乐啊，这个释迦牟尼佛也不会否定，当然有的啊。谁否定了，我们自己也可以亲身经历过的。所以这个存在的啊，短暂的幸福，短暂的快乐是存在的。但是这个短暂的这个快乐呢第一个时间非常非常的短啊，即使比如说我们一个人即使是一辈子都能够健康一切都顺利没有任何的这个不开心的事情这样子的话，那也不就是几十年呢所以这个过了以后呢，然后是另外一回事情，所以呢很短暂。但是我们这个世界上几乎没有这样子的人没有这样子的人，所以我们的这个幸福，所谓的这个幸福和快乐我们因为这一生当中我们是人类，所以人是我们今天为什么是人呢？因为我们过去行善有福报，所以我们今天是人那既然我们就积累了福报才这个才有资格做人的话，那么我们也应该有幸福和应该有快乐。为什么呢？这个行善的果报应该是幸福，应该是快乐，心善的果报不应该是痛苦从这个角度来讲，我们在我们的人生当中，我们的生活当中有一点幸福，有一点短暂的幸福是合理的，应该的。
The Buddha doesn't deny, though, the possibility of having small and fleeting happinesses in life. These we can and surely do have. The fact is, though, that any of these happinesses are ephemeral in nature. They're short-lived. Even a person who was to enjoy good health and good luck and prosperity for an entire lifetime would only be enjoying these happinesses in the context of one life, which is in relation to the limitless rebirths we have had across the entire duration of our existence, a very, very small time indeed. And the reality is, too, that the number of people who have lives like this, existences like this, are very, very small indeed. Of course, that we have a human rebirth in this lifetime is the result of positive and virtuous conduct actions that we undertook in previous lifetimes. So based on this, we should have some expectation of happiness in this lifetime as the result, the karmic fruit of positive actions that we committed in past lives. However, these happinesses are, in essence, very short-lived, very fleeting in nature.
啊，那么我们，虽然我们刚才讲了，我们人是因为过去心善啊，所以我们这次这个成为人啊，应该有幸福，应该有快乐。有些时候我们也可以感受得到啊，但是非常的短暂。第一个，第二个呢，我们的所有的幸福，所有的快乐啊，都是相对的啊，我们没有一个永恒的幸福，我们也没有一个绝对的幸福，全啊，所有都是相对的啊，相对的。所以佛就觉得啊，用幸福这两个字来形容这个轮回不是很恰当啊，用痛苦这两个字来形容轮回的话比较合理的，因为太多太多的痛苦啊。幸福为什么不合理呢？因为幸福有啊，有，但是什么地方有？只有人和天人才有啊。从这个六道的角度来讲的话，六道轮回的角度来讲，人和天人有啊。那么人和天人也不是天天都有幸福，也不是永远都有幸福，偶尔才有这个幸福。所以佛觉得轮回当中其实没有太多的这个幸福，所以佛就经常告诉我们轮回是痛苦的。那么为什么释迦牟尼佛是不是一个悲观主义者呢？是不是一个消极的人呢？他不是啊。首先他让我们明白这个轮回的真相啊，真相，希望我们不要有对这个轮回不要有过高的期望啊。如果有了过高的期望，我这个轮回一定让我们失望的。所以佛告诉我们正是轮回不要过高的期望啊，这样子的意思。
So in addition to our small happinesses being fleeting and short-lived in nature, the other thing about these happinesses we occasionally enjoy is that they are relative in nature. There is no eternal happiness or absolute happiness that we can enjoy. So it's for this reason that the Buddha felt that happy was not an appropriate way of describing psychic existence. In fact, that suffering was a more accurate characterization of how things are. Happiness, in any case, of the six realms of samsara is really only a situation that is enjoyed by humans and demigods. And even in these two realms, it's not something that is always there. It only happens occasionally. So in describing samsara as suffering, the Buddha was not being overly pessimistic. What he was wanting us to do was to face squarely the reality of samsara and not to overestimate its capacity for bringing us happiness.
我们问很多人什么时候觉得什么时候一生当中什么时候最幸福的呢？很多人就会告会说童年的时候就是最幸福的但是我们现在呢，现在的小孩也没有童年的这种生活，小的时候就是学习压力，有各种各样的压力，所以八九岁的小孩也都有抑郁症所以这样子以后呢，我们真的不知道这个一辈子当中哪一年是最舒服最幸福哪一月哪一天是最幸福最快乐。 就是说不出来的啊。那么痛苦呢，我们每一年每一天都可以说得出来，太多太多的痛苦，所以人啊都感觉不到太多的幸福啊。这个我们并不是说完全没有痛苦的幸福啊，幸福很少啊。那么人都是这样子的话，那六道轮回当中的地狱啊、恶鬼啊，那就更不用说了，这更谈不上什么幸福。然后旁生啊、动物，也就是谈不上啊什么这个啊幸福。那这样子的话，我们这样子认真的去思考，我们一个很客观的公正的态度去分析到底什么是幸福的时候呢，就是啊我们就是找不到一个真正的幸福。所以佛告诉我们，嗯，不要再啊自欺欺人的去觉得这个轮回当中总有一天我会遇到幸福，不会的，永远都是这样子，所以要想办法超越它啊。
If you ask most people what the happiest time in their life was, most people would answer it was their childhood. However, for kids these days, they really can't enjoy proper childhoods. There's so many pressures they have to face. They have to study. They have to do this. They have to do that. The situation is such that even 8 and 9 year olds these days suffer from depression. So it's very difficult for people these days to really pinpoint, when what time is going to be the most happy, when happiness is going to arrive, what day, what month. This is something that's very difficult to say. On the other hand, suffering is something that we can point to and talk about a lot. It's everywhere. It happens all the time. Certainly, humans out of all the realms of samsara are quite well off. If we think that our suffering is anything, then we certainly should consider the situation of beings in the hell realms and the hungry ghosts and animals, etc. So it was really in response to this situation that the Buddha spoke of samsara as suffering. He did not want us to impose an unduly great expectation on life or cyclic existence to bring us happiness at some future point. Essentially, the future is incapable of bringing us that happiness. Cyclic existence is characterized by suffering, and this is a reality that the Buddha wanted us to squarely and objectively confront.
我们这样子思维以后呢，就是发现这个六道轮回，整个六道轮回啊，都有太多太多的啊痛苦，然后呢，幸福的时间啊，机会很少很少啊。那么这样子以后呢，除了这个以外，我们没有其他的方法啊。比如说，那我们怎么样超越这个轮回？如果没有这种啊，没有这种方法的话呢，这个就是一个很悲观啊，就是一个很消极的一个心态，是一个非常悲观的心态。但是佛教就不是这样，佛教首先让我们啊知道这个轮回是痛苦的啊，然后紧接着啊，既然是指轮回啊，既然是痛苦啊，那你要应该想办法解决这个问题啊，问题解决的方法啊是有的啊，有这个有方法可以解决。那所以呢，佛教虽然告诉我们轮回很痛苦，但是呢，最后还是一个非常积极的人生态度。为什么啊？我们有办法解决啊，所以我们不要一直都以为这个里面总有一天会出现幸福，这里面没有幸福，所以我们要超越，我们要去追求一个更高尚的啊，更高尚的这个幸福啊，永恒的幸福啊，绝对的幸福啊。那这个就是我们的这个学佛的发心的目标啊，这样子就叫做出离心。
If the Buddha was only to have spoken about how cyclic existence is characterized by little happiness and a lot of suffering, without providing us a means or a path for transcending this suffering, then indeed the Buddhist approach or the Buddhist view would be very pessimistic in nature. But this isn't the case. Buddhism, challenge us as to appreciate and to come to a proper understanding of the suffering of samsara. And then after having arrived at that appreciation, the Buddhist tradition then provides us with means for going beyond it, for transcending it. And it's this, essentially, that is entailed in renunciation.
我们现在是这个六道轮回当中的这个，就是我们处于最好的最好的这个一道，就是人道。那如果下一世如果搞不好的话，那就是像地狱啊、恶鬼啊这样子的话呢，这个就是更惨的。所以我们这一生当中拥有人生更幸运的，这是我们可以去选择很多很多的路，由我们懂得选择可以走解脱的路，可以走成佛的路这些就是我们这一生当中最幸运的，就是这些。
So in terms of going beyond samsara, going beyond cyclic existence, and striving towards more ultimate forms of happiness, the fact that we in this lifetime have a human birth is extremely fortunate indeed. It's through having this human birth that we have many choices and options available to us. We have the option of entering into the path of liberation, and we have the option of attaining Buddhahood.
我们必须要知道轮回是痛苦的，不能再自欺欺人我们很多人就希望我的生命当中就出现一些奇迹或者是出现一些很精彩的一点一直都是这么希望，但是呢一辈子绝大多数的人也没有出现什么奇迹，也没有出现什么很精彩的，所谓的精彩实际上就是自己从他自己的角度讲一点也不精彩，一点也没有什么，只是外人觉得很精彩，外人觉得很辉煌，对他自己呢所谓的这些辉煌对他自己其实没有带来什么幸福那么这些都不是幸福，都不能带来幸福，那么到底幸福在哪里呢？那我们也不知道幸福在哪里所以我们还是要超越这个轮回超越这个轮回，我们先不追求不要太重视太执着这样子的这个幸福，稍微我们的目标稍微再高一点这样子的话更有这个希望更有希望，那么这个就是让我们佛就让我们走上解脱的道解脱道，这样子以后呢我们才能够真正的超越了这个轮回，以后呢才能够找到真正的幸福就是我们现在在轮回当中即使是感觉到的幸福也就叫做有漏的幸福，有漏的意思呢有太多太多的漏洞这个幸福有时间有短暂，然后有幸福当中有太多太多的不幸福的东西，然后这个幸福过了以后呢有可能它给我们导致了一个更大的痛苦，所以叫做有漏的这个幸福。
A lot of people sit around hoping for a miraculous day in the future when all kinds of marvelous and extraordinary things might happen that will be capable of bringing them happiness. The fact is that such miraculous feats happen very, very rarely, and in actual fact, when they do, it's not the feat in itself really that's capable of bringing happiness. The incident is really just as it is. It's not capable of bringing the ultimate happiness that people imagine it to be. So what we really need to do is go beyond this kind of overestimation of cyclic existence's capacity to bring us happiness and to strive and aim towards higher, more ultimate forms of happiness, ultimately liberation. Even though there are these other kinds of happinesses that we are rather consumed by, these happinesses are all ultimately provisional in nature. They're inferior in nature. We can describe them as being filled with holes that essentially lose water or drip water all over the place. They're unable to contain their happiness. They're essentially fallible in nature.
啊，这一生当中，因为我们遇到了佛教的教育，我们有了接受佛教的教育的机会，所以我们能够把这个轮回啊，可以啊，可以看得这么清楚啊，可以看得这么远，可以看得这么深啊。否则的话，我们所有人都是被这个轮回的表面的现象啊迷住了，大家都活得非常的迷茫，大家都以为就是我们刚才讲的，比如说有钱有权幸福，其实有了以后呢也不幸福，那么这样子以后呢，大家都不知道我们为什么而活，我们的这个生存的目的，活着的目的到底是什么啊？很多人也不知道，不知道自己生存的目的是什么，这样子的这个茫然的这个生活啊，就是很无聊，非常的痛苦，非常的这个啊空虚啊，这个痛苦呢啊，有些时候呢比我们缺乏物质的痛苦更加的啊，更加的厉害。比如说物质，我们完全没有物质，那我们人会饿死的。但是呢，稍微有点贫穷啊，他会得抑郁症吗？不太可能的啊。但是呢，我们有了钱以后呢，生活变得无聊，不知道要做什么的时候呢，要不就是去吸毒啊，不然的话呢，就是觉得很无聊，然后不知道要去做什么。在这种情况下，很多人得抑郁症的。很多很多的，所以我们人怎么样生活才感觉到幸福，这就是一个很深奥的道理啊。其实这个应该是一个非常简单的东西，但是呢，就是对我们来说越来幸福这两个字越来越神秘，越来越神秘，最后大家都不知道到底什么是幸福。
It's only through having this opportunity to learn the Dharma that we're able to approach psychic existence from a distance that enables us to regard it with clarity, with perspective, and to penetrate essentially its veil. The majority of people are really blinded by it. They're captivated by it. They feel that it is capable of bringing them all kinds of happiness, but they essentially live in a very, very confused, muddled state where they're not even sure about what the very meaning of human existence is. This is what should be, in fact, a very simple kind of question, a very simple issue, a very clear kind of thing for us to comprehend what is happy, what is the meaning of existence and what makes for a happiness existence has in our contemporary age become actually a very mysterious and abstruse question for many people. Whereas, say, a person who is a little bit less than well off is not likely to, not necessarily going to come down with depression. The reality is that these days people who have excess affluence quite often turn to all kinds of negative behaviors because they don't know really what else they should be doing, and they often also are afflicted by depression too. So really, a question which really should be very simple for us to understand and answer has, due to us not being able to clearly see through samsara, become one very difficult to comprehend.
好，这样子以后呢，我们今天讲的啊，都是一个主要是针对是我们人的痛苦，还有就是比较啊概念性的讲一下啊什么是痛苦啊。那么修心的方法，具体的这些方法、思维的方法呢，我们还是要去学啊。这个啊，大圆满的前心啊，普贤上师眼角的思加心的这个轮回的痛苦啊，就是这一块，还有就是宗喀巴大师的菩提道次第光论等等啊。具体的修心啊，非常具体的这个思维的方法，修心的方法呢，我们还是要在这些书啊里面去学习。然后这些书啊，尤其是大圆满的前心普贤上师演讲啊，这个关于他的这个修心方面呢，有太多太多的书啊、诗篇、音频，特别的多啊。大家通过这些方法啊，去思考，这样子以后呢，我们的感受就会更加的会深入的啊，希望大家进一步的去学习。
So tonight we've really talked in a kind of conceptual way about the suffering of samsara and the shortcomings of samsara. We haven't had the opportunity to address in any detail the actual way that we go about contemplating our contemplation practice on this. So for more detailed instruction, we need to turn to books such as the Introduction to the Doctrine Preliminaries, The Words of My Perfect Teacher, and to Tsongkhapa's Stages of the Path to Enlightenment. Both of these texts contain very clear, very detailed instructions on how we go about this practice, and particularly The Words of My Perfect Teacher, there is an abundance of commentaries and online materials available too in relation to this text, so this is something that everybody should turn their attention to.
然后第二个或者第四个最后一个就是因果不虚，因果不虚呢，我们相信因果就是善有善报，恶有恶报，这个善恶的因果报应，我们要这个坚定不移的去相信这个因果报应，叫做这个第四个加薪，那么我们怎么样相信？为什么要相信呢？这个就是我们要进一步的去学习这个善恶因果，为什么善有善报，恶有恶报这些很多都是我们看不见摸不着的。那么一个看不见摸不着的，我们怎么样去相信它等等这些都是我们要进一步的学习。那么这些方面呢，我们可能今天因为时间的关系就今天我们讲不完。那么明天的课里面呢，我们在前面一部分明天的课的内容是有安排的，但是呢我们在这个课前面的一部分的时间可以讲一讲这个因果那么这四个思考四个思维的方式的这个总称就是思加心那么这个思加心修好了以后呢，它的这个共同的结果是什么呢？就是出离心然后我们深深的体会到这个轮回当中我们不能再希望这个里面就出现一个心腹，这里面没有心腹。有所谓的这个心腹都是短暂的相对的，这里没有一个绝对的，这里没有一个让我们完全能够满足的满意的这样子的心腹，这里没有那既然没有这样子的话，那我就去寻找一个更高的心腹。这个是什么？这个就是解脱，我要超越它所以我要去求解脱。从此以后呢，物质我们还是需要的，赚钱我们还是要赚的还是要工作。为什么？就是因为要生存但是呢，我们人生存下来了以后呢，是不是我们的所有问题都解决了？当然不是，生存也应该有一个生存的目的生存的目的呢，就是我们提升自己的生命的级别，净化自己的心灵净化自己的心灵，然后意思就是说我们自己去追求解脱，希求解脱，这样子的觉醒出来了以后呢，这个就叫做出离心这个出离心呢，它就是我们修思加心的结果。要有一个真正的思加这个出离心，一心一意向解脱，而且是坚定不移的这个觉醒的话，那必须要这四个都要去思考，有这个对这个轮回有深入的这个认识深刻的这个认识以后呢，才能够愿意从这个当中解脱，从这个当中走开，离开这个否则的话，我们是非常非常这个喜欢轮回的，让我们离开它，我们离不开的。
So the fourth of the four thoughts that turn the mind is a reflection on karma and its consequences, which refers to a belief generating an unwavering belief in the fact or the law that good actions produce good results and negative actions produce negative results. In order to generate a really strong and unfaltering belief in this, however, it's necessary that we learn more about karma and its operations. For reasons of time tonight, we're not going to have the opportunity to go into this fourth thought right now. However, I will allocate some time at the beginning of tomorrow's teaching to talk briefly about this fourth thought, karma, and its consequences. In any case, the four thoughts taken as an aggregate, when contemplated as a whole, really work towards engendering in us a very strong mind of renunciation. So they help us to realize that happinesses we may have in this life are short-lived, they're fleeting, they're only relative in nature, and that in order to obtain a happiness that is more ultimate, that is more lasting, it's absolutely necessary that we transcend samsara and that we orient our goal for, we make our goal that of liberation. So this is the cultivation of renunciation. It's very important that we have we're able to cultivate a mind of renunciation that's very, very strong. Otherwise, our attachment to samsara is so great that it's very difficult for us to generate the desire to leave it. So taken as a whole, the four practices are essentially the four thoughts that turn the mind, the four common preliminaries really work to help us generate renunciation.
好，今天的课我们就讲到这里。我们现在大家用心去回想一下我们这么多人大家一起听法讲法，这个功德真的是不可思议的，所以我们就专心的回想这样子有非常有意思的。
所能的一他们这是八年多年你别让那盘学家接着那就忘了这八这边做脸做娃做儿秀我们阿红班子人格热巴马色的红我们阿红班子人格热巴马色的红我们阿红班子人格热巴色的红，
谢谢大家，阿弥陀佛。